This segment of the Financial Sense News Hour is brought to you by Nationwide Financial. For more information about Nationwide's products and services, please visit nationwide.com. That's nationwide.com. Neither Nationwide nor any of its affiliates is related to or affiliated with Jim Poplava of Poplava Securities, Incorporated.
This is the Financial Sense News Hour with the president of PFS Group, Jim Poplava. Since 1982, PFS Group has offered asset management and educational resources that have helped investors build, maintain, and preserve their wealth. Now, here's the Financial Sense News team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
We have two topics here today on lifetime income, part of our ongoing series on the Financial Sense News Hour. Let's look at topic number one. Over the weekend, Barron's Magazine ran three major stories on the subject of retirement, one of which was interesting. Die happy. Baby boomers want to have it all, just as they did before they stopped working. They want to have it in their retirement, which means they're probably going to keep spending, which means if their offsprings, the millennials and sometimes the Gen Xers, think that they're going to have something out of their parents' retirement on which they can project their lives forward, they may be well disappointed. And the millennial generation is being known, among other things, for its sense of entitlement, of deserving to receive this, whether or not it does or not. How is this going to play out as far as retirement goes?
We've been talking about how one's disposition towards retirement has been changing. We've seen some major changes, John, over the last couple of decades. You know, I've been doing retirement planning going back to the early 80s. In the World War II generation, which had been raised and grew up during the Great Depression, fighting World War II, this was a generation that really wanted to pass on to their children a better life. And it was very important in terms of retirement planning. This was a generation that was used to living frugally. This was a generation that was used to paying cash for things. And passing on assets onto their heirs was a natural outcome of a generation that lived a very frugal lifestyle. You contrast that to the boomers, who basically have been part of that debt super cycle. They're used to having credit, used to having large credit card bills, mortgages, and debt. And what we're seeing are two trends that are developing with the boomers as they head into retirement. Number one, they intend to work longer. So this idea, boy, I can't wait till I'm age 62. I'm going to get my Social Security check early. I'm going to retire. That is not the trend. As we've talked about, there's been a number of studies, and almost 25 or 30% of all males age 65 intend to work until their late 70s or early 80s. So for boomers, what they know is work. And so from their perspective, they're saying, look, I've had to work all my life. I've accumulated all these things. You know what? I deserve this. And when I go into retirement, I'm not going to change what I do. If I like to travel, I'm going to travel. If I like to have a nice house, I'm going to have a nice house. If I want a nice car, I'm going to have a nice car. And if that means that I'm going to spend more of the assets I accumulated at the expense of leaving less for retirement, or let's say for my heirs, that's the route I'm going to pursue.
Barron's did something similar to what we've been doing here on Lifetime Income. They talked about three different cases or scenarios, and we need to look at those because those become real-world examples.
In the Barron's article, they took three different scenarios. They basically start assuming that you're 58 and you're starting to think seriously about retirement. Your spouse is roughly about the same age, and you both work making a combined $300,000 a year, so you're probably one of the one percenters. You have two kids who are out of college and working. Between the two of you, you've got a nest egg of about $4 million, enough to be safe in retirement, but not enough that you don't have to make choices about how you will live and what you're going to spend on. Will you run down the cash and not worry about the kids is one option. Save more to give your kids an inheritance, option number two. Or number three, just how close to zero do you feel comfortable going anyway? Or will you work longer so that you can avoid many of these tough choices in retirement? Now, they came up with three scenarios. And in scenario one, You retire at age 65 with the intention of paying for your retirement, but you want to have fun. You don't care if there's anything left over for the kids. In this scenario, you stick to a moderate portfolio allocation and keep enough of a cushion that you shouldn't run out of cash until, let's say, your mid-90s. But if there's a substantial market correction, you might have to recalibrate along the way. Under this scenario, 50% of your assets are in stocks, 45% in bonds, 5% in cash. Because you're retiring, they're assuming that your budget is $220,000 a year. Your after-tax portfolio return is about 4.9%. And you're withdrawing from your capital, this is very key, 4%. So let's say if you have $1 million, you're withdrawing at an annual rate of 4% a year, or $40,000. What's left for the kids, they're saying, by the mid-90s, there would be about $3.1 million of your capital left. In inflation-adjusted terms, that would be $1.2 million.
Okay, and then in case two and three?
In case two, you retire at age 65, but you want to leave an inheritance to the kids. So you choose to cut your after-tax spending from $220,000 by roughly $40,000 a year down to $180,000. The portfolio allocation remains the same, so there's less risk of a market decline. Because of the spending cutback, you don't have to crank up your withdrawal rate, except for the withdrawal rate now declines. Instead of 4%, your withdrawal rate on your assets declines to 3% because you're taking less income. Under this scenario, the kids would have $6.9 million when you pass on in your 90s. In inflation-adjusted terms, they would have $2.8 million. And then the third scenario, John, is probably somewhere in between, where the portfolio is a little bit larger and the withdrawal rate is the same. But what happens is you work longer. So instead of retiring at age 65, you work an additional 5 years and retire at age 70, allowing your assets to accumulate and grow. So instead of $4 million, you have $6 million at retirement. And it is really, if you look at this article, and I'm seeing this a lot, it's a major sea change on how people view their retirement. In other words, taking care of the things they like to do is more important. And that's why when you hear us discuss a retirement plan, we always break down the budget into the essentials in terms of, you know, this is what I have. This is my number. This is what I have to live on. The second part of that is, okay, the want-to-haves, what are the things that I like to do that I want to continue doing now that I was doing when I was working? I want to be able to take a couple of vacations a year. I want to keep my golf membership. I want to keep my motorhome. I want to keep my boat. Whatever it is, that goes into the want-to-have categories. And then, of course, the hope-to-haves, or inflation, is the third category. But this is really a major sea change. The other article that they did is called How to Get an A in Lifelong Learning. And boy, I could see this. And they talk about one of the real keys for baby boomers and those heading into retirement is keeping an active mindset and avoiding the cognitive decline in your normal functioning as you age. And it's a great article. If you can pick it up, it is the Saturday, November 10th edition. There are three articles in there. How to Get an A in Lifetime Learning. One of the ones that I use is called thegreatcourses.com. These are CDs, books, and DVDs that you can buy that are taught by some of the best professors around the globe, from Harvard to MIT to Berkeley, courses on history, from art to wine tasting. What we're starting to see is a lot of boomers are heading back to college. A lot of community colleges have a lot of programs designed for boomers or individuals age 50 and older. You're seeing a lot of online universities. In fact, there are what we call hitting the road universities, where you can actually go on a cruise ship and take a six-week course or study. So they talk about, John, a completely different retirement lifestyle. Number one, people working longer. Number two, going back to school for fun, re-educating themselves, keeping their mind and bodies active from exercise to learning. And number three, more of an emphasis on maintaining one's lifestyle versus retirement. A major, major sea change in the way people are planning for retirement. And the best way to do that is to have a retirement plan.
In the very first case study that we did, the case study of Bill and Jan Smith, obviously the names are not real names, but it is a real case study. If you come up with a retirement plan, this buffers you from having to knee-jerk, both intellectually and emotionally, to everything that's going on in the market, as well as the political shifts, which include taxation, because the plan will get you through that. So we're talking here about a worry-free retirement and something that lets you sleep at night.
Yeah, it's interesting. And the reason I want to talk about this, because I just met with both of them this week. They came in. One of the issues that was very important to them and their plan was the ability to fund gifts to their grandchildren so their grandchildren will have a good education, especially Jan being a school teacher. And just to kind of refresh everybody's memory, this was one of the first case studies we discussed on the program. Bill was age 66 when he retired, and his wife is age 58. She was going to retire within 2 years. As a teacher, she was earning $80,000 a year as a salary. And when she retires with 30 years of service, she would get roughly about 66% of that salary as a pension. And Bill, who had retired earlier, had rolled over the bulk of his money in a 401k, and that was in 2006, 2 years before the market collapsed, and what used to be an $800,000 portfolio had dropped to $650,000, pulled out of the market, been in cash. And so just to kind of briefly update you, Bill's Social Security was roughly about $1,450 a month, $17,400 a year. Jan's pension at retirement would be $54,000 versus a salary of $80,000. And so their entire income from Social Security and pensions would be $71,500 versus their budget of $105,000, roughly a $33,000 shortfall. Now, one of the things that you often hear us do on the program when we talk about a retirement plan is putting your money in knowing what your number is when it comes to expenses, because that'll help you better able to put together a portfolio that helps meet those objectives over your retirement years. Now, their essential budget was about $90,000 a year. The must-haves, which included golf membership and travel, $10,000. And the want-to-haves were $5,000, and these were the educational gifts they would like to make to two of their grandchildren. So their total budget was $105,000, less their pension and Social Security. They had a shortfall of roughly $33,000. Now, they had a home, but that home had a mortgage on it. Their home in Escondido was valued about $450,000. Their liabilities were about $300,000. In investment assets, Bill's IRA was about $650,000. Jan's 403B plan, if you're not familiar what a 403B is, it's kind of like the 401k version of a retirement plan for teachers, was worth about $300,000. They had about $40,000 in cash, $990,000 of investment assets, total assets of about $1,400,000. They owed $300,000 on the house. Now, one of the problems that we had to address is Bill's health, because he did have cardiovascular disease. The difference between Bill and Jan, 8 years, their greatest fear is outliving their assets, especially for Jan, and Bill's fears of the market having rolled his IRA over into the stock market in 2006 and having gone through the downturn between 2007 and 2009. So basically, what we did to solve that problem is to make up for the loss in Jan's income, we did a life annuity, a 10-year certain on Jan's life, which basically produced roughly about $20,000 a year income. And then we also took Bill's IRA. We took about $500,000 of the IRA, put that into a laddered bond portfolio at 4%. The balance went into dividend income producing about 3%, and then we took $230,000 of Jan's $300,000 403B plan, and we did a 10-year certain, meaning that it was only on Jan's life only because of the 8-year difference, and plus that she was female, because she was more likely to be the sole survivor. And we put in a 10-year certain just in case something came out that we couldn't expect. But that was producing $2,000 a month or $24,000 a year. The balance went into dividends. That produced about $50,000 a year. So the grand total on income was $122,000, less their budget of $105,000. And the other thing we did is we increased their mortgage payment by refinancing the house with the 15-year mortgage, because that was a real key for Jan. She didn't want to leave where they lived. They live near a country club. They like their neighbors. They like their friends. And she wanted a free and clear home. So basically, at age 73, Jan's house would be free and clear.
So the plan has been implemented and it's in place, and you met with them this week. Is there anything else that's come up, something that somebody didn't think of that needs addressing?
No. In fact, the entire conversation was, we weren't talking about the fiscal cliff. We weren't talking about the downturn in the markets. We were basically talking about what would be a good idea for their grandchildren in terms of this year's contribution that they were making to their educational trust. And, you know, we talked about some dividend paying stocks, and it's amazing. You know, I can't overemphasize this. Yes, the market's down about 700 points. And the dividend income program that are involved, obviously some of those stocks have pulled back with this correction. But John, they weren't worried about it because almost half of the companies in that portfolio have increased their dividends. Their bond portfolio, which we put in place, is still producing the income. That hasn't changed with the fiscal cliff. In fact, the bonds have actually gone up in value. The monthly annuity that's coming in with Jan's annuity, that hasn't changed. So, John, nothing in their lifestyle has changed. And that's why you want to have a plan. I mean, if you take a look at their assets, a laddered bond portfolio was not affected. Those bonds will mature. When they mature, they'll get their money. We'll reinvest those at whatever prevailing interest rates are at the time, and I believe they'll be going up over the years. The dividends are producing quarterly income, well, actually monthly, even though they pay quarterly. But half of the stocks in the portfolio have increased their dividends, and also the monthly annuity. That hasn't changed. So life goes on for Bill and Jan Smith. It hasn't been changed by the election outcome. It hasn't been changed by the stock market outcome. It hasn't been changed by quantitative easing. None of those things have changed throughout this whole period that everybody's been worrying about, whether it was the downturn in the markets earlier in the summer, worried about a recession, whether the Fed was going to launch QE, who was going to win the elections, and now the fiscal cliff. It didn't change.
So what we're saying here, not only the old concept of diversifying, is that when you know what the plan is, when you know what the objectives are in the plan, and they didn't have everything in the stock market, they have things invested elsewhere, then you can adjust your plan to match whatever the outcome is, and you've got the bases covered. Remember the old thing from the A-Team, feels great when a plan comes together.
Absolutely. And that's why I think if you're 5 years away from retirement, you're 10 years away from retirement, or you're in retirement now and you've got these worries, you don't know what your number is, and you find yourself reacting constantly to whatever happens in the market. You turn bearish, then the market goes up, you turn bullish, then the market goes down. I can't overemphasize, put together a plan. It will be the single largest determining factor of how successful your retirement outcome will become.
Individuals would like to contact you regarding a retirement plan. There is obviously a method for doing so.
We have a toll-free number, 888-486-3939. That's 888-486-3939.
And coming up next, Yolanda York from the Department of Social Security is going to join us and, well, looking at the issue of everything you really should be asking about your Social Security when you're planning to apply for Social Security benefits.
It takes a worried man to sing a worried song. It takes a worried man to sing a worried song. It takes a worried man to sing a worried song. I'm worried now.
Joining me as a special guest on the program today is Yolanda York. She's Public Affairs Specialist at the Department of Social Security Administration. And Yolanda, as we begin, I wonder if you would explain for our listeners, to qualify for Social Security benefits, what does one need to do? In other words, what are the number of quarters one needs to work, and what are the levels of income that one needs to earn in order to qualify for Social Security benefits? Could we begin with that, if we may?
Yeah, the simple things about Social Security, you know, it really is such a simple program. Most people think of Social Security as their retirement, but it's absolutely more than that. It's also a life insurance policy. It's a disability. And the way you get insured, you have to earn credits. So for an individual to be eligible for retirement benefits, you need to earn 40 credits. And that will get to a Social Security benefit when the time comes to earning retirement. Now, in this year, in 2012, you need to earn $1,130 in wages or self-employment, and this will earn you one credit. The most you can earn in 1 year is 4 credits. So that would be $4,520. Now you have 4 credits for that 1 year.
A credit, Yolanda, is equivalent to one quarter's worth of earnings?
Yes, and you know, prior to 1978, we used to call them quarters. Now we just call them credit, because back then, you had to earn them in that specific quarter. Now it doesn't matter if you earn all the money in 1 day, 2 days, or throughout the year. As long as you make $4,520, that will earn you 4 credits. And again, 1 credit equals $1,130 in wages.
Now, I know over the years, Yolanda, there have been several changes in terms of Social Security, and they've raised the retirement age. And they began, you know, when it was originally put into place back in, I think, 1933 or 36, I forget the year, but it was minimum benefits at age 62, full benefits at age 65. Can you bring us up to date on how those age limits have changed?
Yes. There are some key numbers people need to remember. So 62, that is still the earliest one can receive a Social Security benefit. If you take it at age 62, you will get 75% of your benefits. If you want to get 100% of your Social Security, then you need to wait to now full retirement age. And full retirement age is going to be 66 years of age. Anyone born after 1960, 67 is full retirement age. And if you recall back in 1983 when Alan Greenspan was in the committee, he knew we were having problems with Social Security and something needed to be done, Social Security going. So at that time, the retirement changed from 65 to what now it is, 66 and 67, depending on your birthday. So at 66, you would get 100%. 62, you get 75%. And it is a month-by-month reduction. So if you're at 62 years and 5 months, obviously the reduction is less than had you taken it at the beginning at 62.
Yolanda, let's say that, I don't know, I'm a doctor and I enjoy what I'm doing. So I decide not to elect to get my Social Security benefits at my full retirement age at age 66. If I postpone getting my benefits at full retirement age, how much do my benefits increase per year?
This is very good to know. If you delayed your benefits and not take them at full retirement, you will earn an additional 8% more per year, and that will go up until the age of 70. So between 66 and age 70, you would be earning an additional 8% on your benefits. So if you're that physician or anyone else that wants to hold off until age 70, you will now get 132% of your benefits.
Wow. I don't know anything that's going up 8% a year right now.
That's exactly right. And this is where people need to make the right choices. And this is why they need to visit our website, www.socialsecurity.gov, because we have these great calculators that can assist that individual thinking, well, I'm really not sure if I should take my benefits at 62, wait till 66, or maybe wait till 70. We have these calculators that could help you determine, and then you realize, you know, the value of the money as it's growing. And if Social Security is not a huge portfolio in your financial, in your retirement age, then considering letting it sit there to earn that 8%, it's going to be an outstanding issue for you.
Let me give you a situation that we often run into, Yolanda, and I'd like to get your thoughts on this. Let's say that I'm 62 and I get laid off from my job. However, I'm not ready to go into retirement. I'm laid off, so I can apply for Social Security benefits, but I'm more likely to find another job. Let's talk about what a person does in that situation, because obviously, if you're laid off, you can qualify for unemployment benefits. But if there's every reason to believe that a person wants to go back to work, is going to try to do everything they can to find gainful employment, what do they do in a situation like that? Because as you just mentioned, at 62, you only get 75%. So if they can wait 4 more years, that's another 25% increase in benefits.
Well, it is a good question to ask yourself, because if you know that you get laid off, and there is a work test, a retirement earnings test, and let me give you the numbers. For 2012, if you're under full retirement age, if you're under 66, you can make up to $14,640 in wages or self-employment. So if you get laid off and you haven't made this amount of money and you find another job and you know you're going to make under the $14,640, then you should definitely maybe consider taking Social Security if you need this benefit now. If you go over that, the $14,640, then we're going to hold $1 for every two. When you become 66, it's unlimited earnings. You can earn as much as you want and get all of your Social Security benefits. So recently, I just had a gentleman who filed at 62. 12 months down the road, decided, you know what, I just found myself this great job. It's paying me well. I want to suspend the benefits. So he did. He suspended his Social Security benefits, went back to work full time. He decided to actually withdraw his claim and pay back those 12 months and then started. And now he's going to start whenever, you know, in the future, he'll start at 100% or possibly even, you know, incurring those delayed retirement credits. But that's one option people have. If you find that within 12 months, you decide, okay, this was not a good idea from the moment you filed, you have 12 months, you can always withdraw your claim.
Okay, so in this case where a gentleman applied for benefits at age 62, then got a good job, so if you pay back the benefits that you received, you can start that clock towards a full retirement benefit at age 66?
Exactly. Exactly.
That's good to know, because I have run into this with a lot of individuals in this kind of market, and especially, you know, the recession that we just went through. A lot of people got laid off. Now the economy's improving. Some of them are going back to work again. You know, you bring up something that I think most people are unaware. I know for the longest period of time, when I was doing financial planning for the first couple decades, you had these wage limits that you could earn before you'd reduce your benefits. I think there was one that used to be from age 62 to 65, and then there was another one from 65 to age 70. But back in 2000, the Senior Citizens Freedom to Work Act eliminated the retirement earnings test. Let's talk about that, because there are a lot of people that don't realize this law went into effect, and it's been in effect more than a decade.
That's very true. In fact, I get to hear stories like that where people hear a presentation on Social Security and didn't know that they could start collecting the benefits. And mostly it's I hear it with women where they're still working at their job, you know, and they didn't know they could take Social Security. Most of the women that I run into, you know, they're 67 years of age, and they could have been drawing Social Security at 66, even though they're still making a $60,000 salary, because the year you attain 66 years of age, it's unlimited earnings. You can earn as much as you want and get your Social Security benefits. Of course, you know, like for this, specifically for this woman that I'm thinking about, yes, she's 67 and she could have started taking them at 66, but now she'll have that extra 8% added to her Social Security benefit.
I want to talk about spousal benefits, because let's say that, especially for a lot of the World War II generation, the husband was the main breadwinner. For many spouses, they stayed at home and they raised the family, so they did not work or get enough credits. Now, that's obviously changed over the years, especially with the baby boomer generation. But what about spousal benefits? Can you tell us what are the rules regarding a spousal benefit?
Yes. A spouse is eligible to receive Social Security benefits under his or her spouse, and they are eligible to get 50% of the unreduced rate that the wage earner received.
Explain unreduced.
Okay, well, let me first, for example, let's say my husband's eligible for $2,000 a month. I am his spouse. I'm 66 years of age. I would be eligible to get 50% of that $2,000. So I would get $1,000. He would get $2,000. The $2,000 is the unreduced rate. That means that he did not take his benefit early. So $2,000 is what Social Security would be paying the spouse. So I would get 50% of that. If I want to take at 62 instead of 66, then it's a 35%, not a 50%. So if you take it early as a spouse, you will get a reduction, and it's a reduction for life.
Let me give you another example. Husband and wife, they wait to full retirement age, 66. Let's say the husband was the main breadwinner, but both husband and wife worked. The husband had a larger salary at the time. And let's take an example, as you just gave me. Let's just take a hypothetical. The husband is getting $2,000 a month. The wife is getting $1,000 a month. The husband passes on. The wife is the survivor. What happens to Social Security benefits for the survivor?
The survivor now inherits the larger benefit. So if she took her benefits at 66 or full retirement, she would now be eligible for that $2,000 benefit.
Okay, so she would give up her $1,000 benefit and receive her husband's of $2,000.
Yes, you get the higher of the two. And Jim, you brought a really great example of somebody passing on. And, you know, in our lifetime, some of us have more than one marriage. But let's just say in your scenario, that woman had some previous marriages. And they were marriages that lasted for more than 10 years. When she filed for Social Security for the survivor's benefit, Social Security will ask her about any previous marriages. And if she had a marriage that lasted for more than 10 years, and that spouse, let's say if they're deceased or their benefit is higher, we will then let her know that she might be entitled to a higher benefit, not the current spouse that just passed, but maybe on a different record.
Well, that's important. I didn't know that, because we do see this in today's society where, you know, there may be second marriages, and that is something I didn't realize. Let me ask you this, Yolanda, what about survivor benefits? For example, unmarried or disabled children of a deceased worker, or let's talk about what happens there.
Right. This is where I always like to talk to people about the value of Social Security. This is why it's so important to pay into Social Security, because we pay very little. You know, if you're employed, employer pays 6.2, you pay 6.2. With that, you have great benefits. And again, it's not a retirement, but it's also like a survivor's benefit insurance, because if the father, the mother dies and they leave children behind, disabled children behind, you know, children that became disabled prior to age 22, or they leave a widow, they are now eligible to get benefits from that deceased individual. I was a child. I was 9 years old when my father died at 32. You know, he was 32 years of age. He left 6 kids behind. Mm. We were all receiving Social Security benefits. Had my father not paid into Social Security, none of us would have gotten anything. And, of course, we all got the benefits until we became of age 18. And the same thing could be that, let's say you're working now and you become disabled. I work with a lot of wounded warriors currently. And, you know, we have a lot of men and women returning back from Iraq, Afghanistan. 22-year-olds, most of my average audience is between 22 and 27, severely disabled men that they had no idea that they could qualify for Social Security now. So, yes, if you pay, you're going to be eligible for this insurance.
This is very important. And there's so many aspects that Social Security covers in retirement. I want to move on to next, because there are a lot of boomers now that are in their late 50s, mid-50s, Yolanda, let's talk about the resources that you have at Social Security. So let's say that, I don't know, let's just take an example. I'm age 55, and let's say I want to retire at full retirement benefits, which in this case is 66. First of all, I'm going to need to find out what my full retirement benefits are. Take us through some of the things that you have on your website that can be very helpful to individuals that are planning for their retirement in terms of, one, finding out what their benefits are going to be given the amount of quarters that they've contributed into Social Security, and number two, weighing the options of taking Social Security at an early age or waiting to, let's say, full retirement age at 66 or 67, or maybe even age 70 if they're in a field where they can see themselves working for a longer period of time.
Well, Jim, you really ask great questions, and this is something our audiences do need to know. So on our website, www.socialsecurity, we have tailored this website specifically for baby boomers. We've made it so easy that I'm a baby boomer, and I know that if I have to click more than three times to get to a page, I'm just not going to do it. On our website, we have this Estimate Your Retirement Benefits, and what you will do today if you use this link, www.socialsecurity.gov, is put your name, Social Security number, date of birth, and then verify this information. Then it will ask you, you know, what is your current salary? When do you expect to retire? If you think you're going to retire, let's say, at 57 and not start collecting benefits at 62, you need to know how much that's going to make a difference. So you can go to this estimator and do just basically scenarios, work scenarios. If you retire at this age, what will it be at 62? What will it be at 66? Or maybe if you continue to work until 62, then how much more does your money grow by continuing to work or choosing that important date of retirement? This scenario on our website is accurate information. The statement we used to send, do you recall 3 months before your birthday, people would get a statement in the mail?
Sure.
We're not sending those anymore because now you can get those online. It's Social Security statement online. This information will come to your mail, and it's secure. You can be confident that you're not going to have any problems. As long as you make sure you're on socialsecurity.gov, that's another caution. Make sure it's a government site. And it'll give you this information. If I'm a baby boomer, I want to know what my benefit's going to be at 64. Now you have this correct information.
What about, finally, disability benefits? How do they come into play, and how does one qualify?
One does need to be paying into Social Security to be eligible for the disability. It's a little bit different than retirement. Whereas retirement, you only need to earn your 40 credits, you're insured, you're locked in. Disability, you have to be currently insured. That means you have to be paying into this program to be disabled. So if I was to become disabled at the age of 50 and I have been paying into Social Security, if I was to be awarded for this disability benefit, which, by the way you qualified, you have to have a disability that is so severe it prevents you from doing any kind of work. And then I need to get medical evidence to attest to this information. If Social Security finds me disabled, I will get my benefit at 50, because this is the age that I'm applying, and it will be whatever I would have gotten at 67, which is full retirement age, I would be eligible to get 100% starting today. There wouldn't be no reduction. And I'll get that disability benefit until one of two things happens. I either go back to work or I die. And if I have children under 18, they also get benefit under my record.
You talked about, as we began our discussion, there's a minimum amount that you have to earn per quarter, the figure of $1,130 and $4,520. That would give you four quarters of a credit and 40 credits in total. So basically 10 years worth of quarterly credits. What counts towards that? Because there's a lot of confusion in terms of what counts towards payments into Social Security. Yolanda, we're mainly talking about gross wages that a person has. In other words, you're not talking about pensions, income from investments, IRA distributions, interest, or dividends.
That's correct. It's only earned by wages or self-employment. So you cannot buy Social Security credits. You have to earn them. And the only way to earn them is that you have a job, you get paid with a W-2, or you're self-employed and your Schedule SD shows you reporting wages.
So, Yolanda, take for our listeners, let's say I am going back to my example, I'm age 55. So your website is socialsecurity.gov. Where's the first place I'm going to want to go when I go to your website?
I would definitely go to Top Services and check out Estimate Your Retirement Benefits on the left-hand side, and then get your new Social Security statement online if you don't have that. The important reason to look at your statement online is because what people don't know, how does Social Security figure your monthly benefit? Why is it some people get, you know, $100, others get $2,000? The more you pay, the more you get from Social Security. But what's important to know is that we take the high 35 years of your lifetime earnings, apply a formula, and this is how we determine your monthly benefits. So when you're looking at the statement that Social Security has for you of all the earnings you paid into Social Security, if you notice by looking at it that maybe there's a zero year, nothing was reported for that year, and you know you actually have a W-2 or you were self-employed, that's going to really bring down your monthly Social Security benefits. So if you have documentation that you work, bring to Social Security that W-2 or proof of wages, and we will give you the credit to increase your monthly benefit.
I'm on your Social Security website. I'm on your homepage, and you've got some tabs on the top. You've got home, retirement, disability, survivor, some of the services. Can I, Yolanda, let's say I'm ready to apply for Social Security. Do I have to go down to the office or can I do that online?
Oh, Jim, very good. We really want people to do most of their business online. So you can file for retirement. It'll take you 15 to 17 minutes to apply for retirement online. In most cases, if you're born in this country, we won't even need your birth certificate because we can verify it with the state that you were born. If you want to file for Medicare only, you can apply for Medicare only. That will take you less than 10 minutes. Medicare, that's another thing we want to maybe quickly mention, is that you can get Medicare at age 65. But if you're still working and maybe want to delay it until you terminate employment because you have insurance through work, you know, you can always delay the Medicare until then, but Medicare is still eligibility at age 65. So you can file for retirement, you can file for disability and survivors online. Another great thing, another tool that we have on our website is frequently asked questions. Really great tool because, you know, when people call into Social Security and, you know, they call and they may be waiting on the phone for 7 minutes, you could have found your answer on the frequently asked questions. It's a really great website. We also have webinars online. You can receive updates by email. Do you want to know what's going to be happening with the cost of living for next year? That information can come directly to you. Social Security announces a 1.7% benefit increase in 2013. You know, that just popped up on my screen because I signed up for this receive updates by email.
Well, you know, I'm on your retirement tab page, and there's so many great things here. Use our retirement planner, which for anybody listening, I'd highly recommend. So, you know, you can better estimate, you know, should you wait? Should you take your benefits early? Estimate your Social Security retirement benefits, find your full retirement age, benefits for your spouse, benefits for you and your spouse. It's all right there. And more importantly, you can do this online. And Yolanda, I was glad to see that frequently asked questions because we all know that Social Security is a large agency. I'm sure you get, you know, just thousands of calls on a daily basis. Rather than waiting online, you can go find these questions and probably do it very quickly online. But more importantly, it is much easier to apply online, I think, than go wait in an office, see somebody. And for most boomers who are very computer literate, it's just an easier way to go about business. You guys have really done a great job in this.
Thank you.
Yolanda, I'd like to have you back in the future. Next time I'd like to talk maybe about Medicare. But in the meantime, as we close, I'd like to give out your website. If I could, it's socialsecurity.gov. That's G-O-V, socialsecurity.gov. www.ohio.gov, and right there at the top of the page, on the left-hand side, they have all the services from benefits for applying online, finding what your current benefits are, and they have a whole section on retirement, disability, survivor's benefit. Job well done, Yolanda, and I'd like to thank you for joining us here on the Financial Sense NewsHour.
Well, Jim, thank you so much. Social Security really appreciates you having us on the air.
All the best, and hope to talk to you again.
Absolutely. Thank you. Have a good day.
Next week, Jim, the markets are going to be closed all day Thursday for the United States Thanksgiving holiday. Some areas are open on Friday, but just for X number of hours. But we'll be doing our show on Wednesday with a normal posting of the show on Saturday.
And also, we're going to be starting a special new provision on the show. We're going to take a topic very much in the headline news, whether it's something like the fiscal cliff, bull or bear market, and we're going to take that and discuss it from opposing viewpoints. And we're going to begin that, our first segment coming up on next weekend's show with Eric Townsend and myself. I will take the bullish argument. Eric is going to take the bearish argument. We'd love to hear your feedback on this new segment. That's coming up next week. The next show will be next Saturday. We just want to wish all of you in the U.S. a happy Thanksgiving. Make it safe. Enjoy the family. On behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on the Financial Sense News Hour. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant weekend.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSN. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.
This segment of the Financial Sense News Hour is brought to you by Nationwide Financial. For more information about Nationwide's products and services, please visit nationwide.com. That's nationwide.com. Neither Nationwide nor any of its affiliates is related to or affiliated with Jim Poplava of Poplava Securities, Incorporated.